with you.
Smart, Lisa said, before getting really quiet.
Just the first time, he said. Not anymore. I want you here.
Oh, good.
I was getting scared the situation would forever ruin Robin Hood Men in Tights for me.
That would be tragic, he said. I think my grandma's hoping you'll fall in love with me and save me from myself.
Too bad I've got Clark, she joked.
Too bad I'm gay,
he blurted out, closing his eyes and expecting the silence to be deafening.
Yeah, too bad,
she said with a big smile. She raised her hand into the air for a high five, and he sort of just looked at it until she put it back down.
I've never told anyone before.
Oh my God, she said.
Thank you.
For being gay or for telling you?
Both?
You're welcome. I sort of had a panic attack when you got here.
I figured. Your mom said you were trying to find socks.
She's a bad liar, he said, raising his foot into the air and wiggling his toes.
At least give her credit for trying. She seems really cool.
Pretty cool, he agreed. Dad, too.
This wouldn't really work if they weren't, I guess. And, do they know that you're gay?
Why waste their time with it? It's not like it'll ever be an issue anyway.
Yeah, but it's who you are, right?
I guess so, he said. I don't really know how to be any way else.
When did you know?
I was 12, maybe. Something I just knew one day, even though I hadn't known it the day before.
So it's like that, huh? A feeling?
Not just being into other dudes?
Oh, no, it's that, too. Of course, it's that.
But it's more, I think. Not so much a feeling as a fact, like having blue eyes or brown hair. It's just maybe something you don't discover until you're ready to understand it better.
Like being straight, she said.
Only we don't have to deal with all that closet bullshit.
Bingo, he said.
She slipped off her shoes and put her feet up with his.
Oh, he said, standing up. I have candy.
Make it happen, Captain, she said. When he got back from the kitchen, a box of Mike and Ike's in one hand and hot tamales in the other, he sat much closer to her. So close their elbows occasionally grazed during the entire movie. And like they'd done it a million times, even without thinking about it, they silently passed the candy back and forth between them, with their eyes locked on the screen.
Chapter 12. Lisa Prater. Lisa ended up staying at Solomon's house until well after midnight. Then, just as they were about to say goodbye at the front door, she asked if she could give him a hug. Sure, he whispered, but make it quick. She didn't. She held on just long enough for him to know she meant it. And she did mean it. He had told her something he'd never told anyone else in his entire life. If that isn't friendship, then what is? She was in the inner circle now. Hell, she was the inner circle, and all the progress she'd made in just two visits with Solomon was enough to help her ignore that little pang of guilt she was feeling in her stomach.
You can tell Clark, too, he said before she left. He should probably know he's got nothing to worry about.
Even though it was 1 a.m. before she got home, she needed to talk to Clark. He was at his dad's again, so she knew he'd be up late eating junk food and playing video games or something. And he was.
Yellow,
he answered. She could hear a TV in the background. Well, you don't have to be jealous of Solomon anymore.
Bad date,
he joked. He's definitely gay.
Oh, funny.
Funny?
Not funny, ha-ha, but, you know, funny like my girlfriend's other boyfriend is gay.
Shut up, she said. Anyway, I just wanted you to know.
Great. I'll alert my mom. She'll have some Bibles mailed over ASAP.
It's nothing to joke about, Clark.
Sorry. I think it's great he told you. Sounds like he needed someone to talk to.
I guess so, she said. He asked his parents for a pool.
He goes outside? I'm confused.
No, but he says he's going to.
Crazy,
he said.
But not like crazy, crazy. You know what I mean.
It was sort of sad, she said. He told me he isn't sure he'll ever tell his parents. Says it's a non-issue.
He's not wrong, is he? If he never leaves the house, what's it matter?
It's not just about that, though, right?
I don't know. If I never left my house again and I didn't already have you, I don't think being straight or gay would matter at all. Well, outside of my Google searches.
Gross.
Sorry.
It's bigger than that, she said. Maybe that's part of it, of what's wrong with him. He doesn't know how to be himself because he thinks it doesn't matter who he is. This could factor hugely into his social anxiety.
Lisa, you met this guy once, and the second you show up again, he's coming out to you. That doesn't sound like someone who isn't being himself, does it?
No, she answered. That's what makes it more confusing. He's a little anxious, sure, but otherwise he's like us. Easy to talk to. Funny. Really funny, actually. I just don't know why he can't deal with anything out here. I think he's as capable as anyone.
Obviously not, Clark said. But you think being his friend is the best way to help him?
That's the plan, she said. Start with me, and then eventually bring you into the mix. Show him what he's missing out here.
Oh, is that right? I'm part of this now?
Only if you want to be. You said yourself that you're getting tired of the guys from the team.
So tired, he said. Everything is such a pissing contest with those morons.
Well, there you go.
You know, you could probably just make something up for your essay and still get that scholarship, he said.
I know that, but I want to help him. It's not just about the scholarship anymore.
You promise?
I promise, she said. Give me a few more weeks with him. I don't want to overwhelm him, and since you'll probably dethrone me as his new best friend, I'd like to get to know him a little better.
I am very fun, he said.
Let me guess. Right now, you are wearing pajama pants, probably nothing else, and there's a bag of Doritos somewhere visible in the room. Maybe even a donut or two.
Amazing! How do you do it?
Magic, she said. What's your sister doing?
Same thing. We've been playing video games for like 5 hours. I'm not proud, Lisa. But also, I am proud.
It's funny, she said. The second I start hanging with a dorky recluse, you turn into one. What is this life? The next day, Lisa was happy to find Ron's car in the driveway. She didn't like him much, but her mom did, and she was a lot happier when he was home. It sucked that they were the way they were, one of those couples that's either all over each other or at each other's throats. But some people are just wired that way, Lisa thought, and she was glad she wasn't one of them. Around lunchtime, she was looking over some history notes when her phone rang. It was Solomon. "Didn't I just talk to you a few hours ago?" she answered.
"What happened last night?"
"We watched the best movie ever, and you came out to me."
"Yes, yes," he said. "Being out is exhausting. I just woke up like an hour ago."
"And what have you accomplished? Because me, I've already run 2 miles, written a book report, and started studying for a test."
"Yeah, I spent 20 minutes watching a documentary on eels until I got too creeped out to keep going."
"Okay, so you're having a productive day, that's good." He laughed harder than she'd expected. It was a great laugh, that kind where you can actually hear the ha-ha-has if you listen closely enough.
"Yeah, did you know the lifespan of an eel is about 85 years?
"That's horrifying. Solomon, did you call to invite me over?"
"Maybe."
"Go ahead. Just do it. Don't be shy."
"Are you serious?" he asked.
"If you want to be friends, you're going to have to do the things that friends do. They call each other up and invite each other over. You're halfway there."
"Fine. Do you?"
"Do I what?"
"Do you want to come over today?"
"I'm actually pretty busy," she said, holding in a laugh.
"You've got to be kidding me." I am. How's 2 o'clock sound? I've got about 30 more pages of notes to look over.
That's perfect, he said. I mean, if you want to.
Solomon, she scolded. You were doing so well. What's this if you want to business? I want to, okay?
Great, he said. What do you want to do?
Do you play chess?
I do, very poorly.
Awesome, so chess it is then. Do you have a set?
Yeah, he said. It's an Adventure Time edition. Please don't make fun of me.
Are you kidding? Clark and I watch it all the time.
You're shitting me, he said.
Am not.
When she got to his house a couple of hours later, he had the chess set ready to go at the dining room table. She'd actually never spent any time in this room, and it looked like nobody else had either. Maybe this was an eat-on-your-own family like hers had always been. For whatever reason, she sort of hoped not, though.
"What's your favorite food?" she asked, taking a seat.
"Are we in kindergarten?"
She looked down at the chess set and back up at him with one arched eyebrow.
"Okay," he said, sitting down. "Pizza, probably."
"Ugh," she said. "So boring, Solomon."
"You can say Sol if you want," he said. "Or Solo."
"Can I be honest with you?"
"Yeah."
"I think Solo sounds kind of mean."
"Nah," he said. "Think Han, not lonely agoraphobe."
"Ah, yeah, that works."
"I like Sol, though. My great-granddad was a Sol."
"Mine was Gator," she said.
"Ooh, wait. Gator Prater?"
"Yep," she said, lowering her head in fake shame. "He was a zoologist. I'm not even kidding."
"What was his real name, though?"
"Dick," she said.
"Well, see, that's just a man who made good choices."
"Okay, okay, are you ready to be annihilated at chess?"
"Ready as I'll ever be," he said. "Who goes first?"
"Oh, Sol, you're not off to a great start."
"Shit," he said. "White first, I remember."
"You know, you've got quite the mouth for someone who's never been to high school."
"Don't let my folks fool you. When no one's around, they talk like sailors."
"My mom made me wash my mouth out with soap last year," she said. "I called my stepdad a son of a bitch. Funny thing is, she was only mad about the cursing."
"I don't do it much around them," he said.
"That's just your form of rebellion. If they were criminals, you'd probably grow up to be a cop. The world is a mysterious place."
"Or maybe you just bring out my bad side," he said, moving his first pawn 2 spaces.
"I doubt that," she said, moving one of her knights. She didn't care who won the game, really. She was trying something she'd read about online that morning. Game therapy. It was supposed to relax and distract a patient enough to help them open up more about personal or painful things. Now that Solomon had shown so much progress so quickly, she wanted to see how far she could push him without him realizing he was being pushed. Lisa won the first game, trapping Solomon's king with a pawn and a rook. Then, without a word, she watched as he reset all the pieces on the game board and carefully turned it around so the white pieces were facing her.
"I'm better with black," he said.
Halfway through the game, it looked like Solomon might actually win. He was so focused on the board that he hadn't looked up in 15 minutes. Maybe it was working, she thought. Maybe now was as good a time as ever for her to play therapist.
"So, aside from losing this game, what's your biggest fear?"
"Being buried alive," he answered with little pause.
"That's reasonable."
"Yours?"
"Tornadoes. Don't ask me why. I've never even been close to one."
"They're giant wind vortexes that destroy whole towns," he said. "Respect."
"And, I don't know, I guess being stuck in upland forever, too."
"And that is where we differ," he said, moving a pawn. "Where do you want to go?"
"Anywhere," she said. "Somewhere bigger, a big city. The suburbs bore the hell out of me."
"But they're full of old people and little kids and crazy guys like me," he said. "What's not to love?"
"Do you do that a lot?" she asked. "Call yourself crazy?"
"Only when it's funny or gets me out of chores."
So your biggest fear is being buried alive. Okay, what about something that could actually happen to you?
Like being asked repeatedly what my biggest fears are when I'm trying to beat you at chess?
Sorry, she said. The mystery will have to stay a mystery, I guess.
He looked up from the board and right into her eyes, like he was asking her what she thought she was doing without saying anything. She answered by looking down and capturing one of his bishops with her queen. When the game was over, Lisa followed him back to his bedroom, where he dug through some boxes in his closet before finally pulling out a small stack of comic books.
Here, he said. Give these to Clark. I've read them 100 times.
For real? She said, flipping through the one on top. Thanks.
No worries. My one stipulation is that he can't hide them. They must be displayed proudly in his home for all to see. It's the only way.
I'll relay the message, she said. Who knows? Maybe you two can meet someday.
Maybe, he said. If you think he'd want to.
You kidding? It's all he talks about. I think he's jealous.
Jealous of the crazy gay kid. That doesn't sound right.
Hey, Saul, she said, her tone getting serious for a second. Those are 2 things about you out of a million. Don't box yourself in.
Too late for that, he said, looking all around the room with an unconvincing smirk. Much too late.
Chapter 13. Solomon Reed. Solomon's grandma always brought a gift. Always. She'd come over every other week or so and, without a word, hand Solomon a nicely wrapped box or a gift bag overflowing with tissue paper. Then she'd look on with big, excited eyes while he unwrapped it, always snapping a photo with her phone. He liked to imagine a big wall in her house that was covered with hundreds of these nearly identical pictures of him, holding video games or DVDs and being forced to smile. But when she came over on that Monday in April to celebrate his new social life, Grandma walked in with her hands full of pool toys instead. Bright-colored floating noodles flopped around in the air above her, bumping into the walls as she started showing off each gift to Solomon and his parents.
"For diving,"
she said excitedly, letting 5 yellow plastic rings slide down one arm and onto the floor.
"Goggles, even some floaties, you know, in case you forgot how to swim."
Solomon stepped forward and started helping her, finding more diving rings, 3 more pairs of goggles, and some swim trunks, and even a Speedo. He held the bright orange bikini up and gave his grandmother a puzzled look.
"You never know," she said. "You could train for the Olympics with all the time you have."
Solomon took the Speedo and rubber band style shot it at his dad, who caught it midair and then held it up to his waist.
"Oh, yeah! I'm going to look good in this puppy."
"Grandma, cancel the pool," Solomon said.
"Fine," she said. "You all make fun, but in Europe that's what they wear. A little culture wouldn't hurt anyone around here."
"Noted," said Solomon's dad, grabbing one of the pool noodles and hitting his son on top of the head with it.
"Thanks, Grandma," Solomon said, putting a pair of goggles on.
"How do I look?"
"Perfect."
And since it looked like maybe she'd cry, he pretended he was swimming through the air toward her and gave her a quick hug. Later, Solomon inflated a large, bright green inner tube on the living room floor while his parents and Grandma chatted over coffee and dessert on the sofa. When he was done, he stood up and fell backward right into the center of it.
"Looks comfortable," Grandma said. "Your father broke his tailbone in middle school and had to sit on something very similar. Only smaller, of course. You remember that, Jason?"
"I broke my ass, Mom.
Of course I remember." "I felt like the worst mother in the world," she said, laughing so hard tears were coming out of her eyes. "I lost it every time I saw that little cushion. I couldn't help it."
"You see, Saul," his dad said, "this is why we never let you stay at Grandma's when you were younger.
"That's not true," she said. "I kept you all the time. You were my little sidekick."
"She used you to sell houses," his dad added. "Dressed you in a little suit and tie and took you with her to show properties."
"Resourcefulness is not something I'll apologize for," she defended. "That's how you build a business."
"Joan Reed Realty," Solomon's dad said. "We'll take you home, after you give us your life savings."
"I miss grounding you," Grandma said, scowling at her son. "So, tell me all about this Lisa girl."
"She's nice," he said.
"Nice?" she asked, looking over toward her son and daughter-in-law. "This kid of yours, he's so expressive, you know."
"We've worked very hard on him," Solomon's dad joked.
"Come on, spill it, kid," Grandma said.
"Okay, she's funny, too. And, I don't know, laid back, I guess. It just wasn't as hard as I thought it would be."
"That's good to hear," she said, looking around to each person in the room and nodding her head.
"Yeah," he agreed. "She came over Saturday night, too."
"And yesterday," his dad added.
"Really?" Grandma asked. "Solomon, do you have a girlfriend?"
"No, it's not like that," he said.
"Okay, so what did you and your friend do then, with all that time together?"
"We watched movies and played chess, mostly."
"Speaking of," Grandma said, "let's you and me go play a game so I can get the real gossip, okay?"
"Sure."
Once they were in the den, he set up a little folding table, and they both started shuffling without a word. Skip-Bo was no joke to Solomon and his grandmother, and since he'd been on a winning streak lately, he knew she'd be out for blood. But as soon as the cards were dealt and they started playing, all she wanted to do was talk about Lisa.
"Wow," she said. "You're really doing it, aren't you?"
"What?"
"You've made a new friend. You say you're going in the backyard soon? You're getting better, kiddo."
"Please don't say that."
"Why not? Why shouldn't we celebrate it?"
"Because it's just too much, okay? It's not that big a deal."
"It's big enough," she said. "Who knows? In a few years, you could be ready to face the world again."
"Trust me," he said. "It's not a switch I can turn on and off, Grandma."
"Slow and steady wins the race," she said.
"I'm not sure that applies here."
"Even so," she said, "don't shut out the possibility of getting better, okay?"
"I'll try not to," he said.
When she went to leave that night, his grandma hugged him a little tighter than usual, and he knew why. She was proud of him, and that was something very new. He knew how to be pitied and misunderstood, but being admired wasn't in his wheelhouse quite yet, though it was certainly something he could get used to.
He got his schoolwork done super early the next day so he could relax a little bit before Lisa came over. He didn't really know what they were going to do, but he'd thought about teaching her to play Munchkin, which was this strategy card game his parents had bought him, but didn't really like playing. He couldn't even get past explaining the rules to his grandma before she said, "This sounds too hard for someone my age." It's funny how she only ever mentioned her age when she didn't feel like doing something. But he knew Lisa would catch on quick, especially after seeing her play chess. He wanted a rematch, but decided to challenge her to something she wasn't so familiar with first. You know, remind her whose house it was and all. This was his territory, his fortress of solitude, impenetrable to the outside world. Only, that wasn't so true anymore, was it? Something new was here, in the form of this surprisingly familiar 17-year-old girl. And as soon as Solomon opened the front door that afternoon, Lisa walked in with a casualness outmatched only by his grandmother's the previous day. She gave him a wave and a smile and moseyed over to the living room to sit down on the sofa. "Pool's coming along," she said, gesturing toward the sliding glass door and out into the backyard. "I hope it's not a trap," he said, sitting down. "Not a bad trap to be in," she said. "I'm sure your parents will use it either way."
"Sure they will," he said. "But I am going out there."
"Good," she said. "Can I come to all your wild pool parties?"
"Oh, no," he said jokingly. "Co-ed fraternization is strictly prohibited."
"Well," she said, picking up the Speedo from the cushion beside her, "it looks like boys wearing Speedos, isn't?"
"My grandma. She bought out a sporting goods store or something."
"Your grandmother bought you a Speedo?"
"Yeah. I didn't try to defend it, okay? Hey, I'm more than used to Speedos."
"I don't have a response for that," he said. "Clark," she said. "Water polo."
"Oh, right. That can't be comfortable."
"He loves it," she said. "I think he's an exhibitionist."
"Feel free to provide photographic evidence at your leisure," he said, turning red.
"Solomon Reed, did you just make a sexy joke about my boyfriend?"
"Maybe. How does water polo work again?"
"Okay, so, think hockey, but in a pool with way less clothing."
"Awesome," he said.
"Is he any good?"
"When he wants to be. He's got motivation issues. I was sort of hoping he'd try for a scholarship, but I can't really figure out what his plan is."
"There's plenty of time left, right?"
"Not really. Applications are due to most schools by December."
"That's terrifying."
"I can't wait," she said. "I fear I've outgrown my peers."
"I'm your peer," he said with a blank face.
"My other peers," she corrected.
"Even Clark?"
"Especially Clark."
"Oh," he said, following it with nothing because that's how much he knew about relationships.
"Sorry. I just wish he'd take things more seriously sometimes. Having a plan is sort of my thing."
"No surprises," he said. "You've clearly come to the right place."
"So far, you've been all surprises."
"Right. Well, I've reached my quota then."
"The land of Solomon," she said.
"Come for the holodeck, stay for the pasty kid in the Speedo."
"I'm not wearing that thing."
"And you do realize I spend 98% of my time reading and watching TV alone, right?"
"I realize you used to,"
she said with confidence. Lisa came over every day that week. She'd only stay 2 or 3 hours, just long enough to play a couple of games or watch a movie. And by the time the weekend rolled around, Solomon knew to expect her around 3:30 or 4 every afternoon. And he could feel himself relaxing a little more with each visit. On Saturday, Solomon's mom insisted on cooking them lunch. He knew it would happen eventually. A mostly silent meal where he'd be forced to look on in horror as his parents took turns interviewing her between bites of food. Up to that point, they'd pretty much stayed out of the way. So well that he suspected they were making sure she'd be sticking around before getting too attached.
"I hope you like enchiladas, Lisa,"
his mom said as they all sat down to eat.
"I do. The cheesier the better."
"These are vegan," Solomon said with a serious expression.
"Oh, well, vegan sounds great too. Vegan all around."
"He's kidding," his dad said. "But you've passed an important test," his mom added.
"Very important," Solomon echoed. "Always love whatever the cook cooks. Isn't that right, Dad?"
That's right.
Unless it's tofurkey. I try it one time and now I'll never hear the end of it, his mom said.
Who wants to say grace?
Is it Christmas? Solomon asked,
looking at her like she'd offered to sacrifice a lamb on the dining room table. Do you say grace at your house? She asked Lisa.
Mom, seriously, the only two rules of a dinner party are no discussing religion or politics.
Lisa, you a big fan of democracy?
His dad asked with a grin on his face.
I'm an agnostic fiscal conservative, actually, Lisa said. But I think you should make Saul say grace anyway.
Fine, he said, bowing his head.
Thank you for the world so sweet. Thank you for the food we eat. Thank you for the birds that sing. Thank you, God, for everything.
Amen.
Amen.
His parents and Lisa said in unison. Also praise Xenu, he added.
Praise Xenu, they echoed.
That was adorable, Lisa said.
The rest of the meal went better than Solomon had expected. They did interview her, but it was innocent enough, and by dessert he just sat back and watched, as they all shared stories and laughed at one another's little jokes. It was as familiar as when his grandma was over, but more exciting. She was new, after all, and as he watched his parents hanging on her every word, he thought maybe they'd needed a Lisa Prater just as badly as he had. Over the next 3 weeks and into May, Lisa spent most of her free time at the Reeds. She'd stay for dinner, most nights, helping Solomon set the table and do the dishes afterward, like they were siblings sharing chores. And he could quickly feel the rhythm in his house changing. The day would be quiet as ever, and then Lisa would show up, and they'd all fight over her attention. But she seemed to love it. Always down for an in-depth conversation about film history with Solomon's dad, or a baking lesson with his mom.
No one here cares about cake, Lisa. It's my living nightmare, Valerie Reed said to her one evening as they poured batter into a cupcake mold.
I didn't peg you for a baker, Lisa told her. I didn't think you'd have time, I guess.
I used to make birthday cakes to help pay for college. My aunt had a cake shop, taught me everything she knew. Plus, you can't do root canals at home. I get bored. One day, Lisa and Solomon were putting together a puzzle that had been taking up one end of the dining room table for going on 2 weeks. They listened to the radio, silently scanning for the right pieces and bobbing their heads to the music. Having a friend was no longer new to him, but he was still Solomon. And that meant he'd sometimes overthink every little thing they said to each other, letting their conversations hang in the air around him for hours after she'd leave, hoping he hadn't said anything stupid or offensive or too immature. Before her, he had nothing to lose except the safety of his home. But now, since she was a part of that, too, he couldn't risk losing her.
You're telling me you've never chatted with anyone online? Lisa asked.
Do Star Trek forums count?
Sure, she said. But you never Skype with anyone?
Strangers looking at me through my computer screen. No thanks.
Agreed, she said. You know, there are sex ones, too, like video chat rooms.
I know. What's wrong with people?
I'm not sure, she said, but I put a little piece of tape over my webcam a long time ago. I don't trust any of my electronics anymore. My phone probably just sent our whole conversation to Walmart or something.
Yep, we'll get coupons in the mail for condoms and webcams tomorrow.
America the Beautiful, she said.
Even on the forums, I don't post too much, he said. It's just never really been my thing.
I like that. A true loner.
The world's too big, he said, and the internet is way too big. I don't hate everybody. I hope you don't think that. I just have to protect myself. And I can't deal with talking to a bunch of strangers who could be anybody from anywhere. It just never feels real. I get that. Lisa? Yeah? Don't you miss Clark? Say what? She asked, finally looking up at him. Well, you're over here, like, every day, and I don't know. I guess I'm starting to feel like I'm stealing you or something. Are you getting tired of me? Is that what this is? She asked, trying to stop her widening smile. Shut up. I think maybe I'm ready to meet him. Oh, yeah? I mean, it's been over a month now. The guy's going to hate me if I don't start sharing you a little. He has his video games, she said, slapping Solomon's words away in the air. I'm serious, though, he said. You think he'll like me? Why does it matter what I think? He's your boyfriend, he said. Maybe we won't get along. That would be unfortunate, she said. However, impossible. You don't think the gay thing will bother him? Bother him? Oh my God, he'll probably volunteer to drive you to a pride parade on day one. He can't be that good. I have this theory that he wears a Superman costume under his clothes at all times, she said. His name is Clark. And then, like a sign from Jor-El of Krypton himself, Lisa's phone started lighting up and vibrating on the table. Speak of the devil, she said, picking it up. Can you give me 1 second?
Sure.
Lisa Prater, girlfriend of your dreams, she answered, shooting Solomon a big smile.
Uh-huh.
Right. Well, okay. Can you do me a favor? Exactly. Thank you. Love you too. Okay, bye.
How's he doing?
Solomon asked, looking down at the puzzle. Super, she said. I'll talk to him later, okay? About coming over?
Now I'm nervous.
Don't be. I'm jazzed about this, Sol. Do you believe in destiny?
Not really, but I like the idea of you believing in it.
Then we're all set, aren't we? And you'll see. Lisa, he said, knowing she could hear his quickened breathing. Solomon had never had a panic attack in front of her, but there'd been a few close calls for sure. A couple of times he'd even pretended to go to the bathroom just so he could calm down and breathe like normal. He was sure she'd noticed, though, and just hadn't said anything. Maybe it made her uncomfortable. Or maybe she was like everyone else and just didn't know what to say or do. Most people would rather do nothing than risk doing the wrong thing. That's something Solomon learned a long time before shutting them all out.
Okay. Okay. She said calmly. It's okay. You're good, Sol.
Sorry, he said, leaning forward and resting his face in his hands.
No apologies. Just breathe and count to 10, okay? That's good. Now exhale slowly at 5. You've got this, buddy.
He looked up at her, counting in his mind. And instead of hiding his face in embarrassment or leaving the room, he did exactly what she told him to do. It was 5 minutes of panic in an otherwise quiet, normal day. 5 minutes of near silence that told him more than any conversation they'd ever had. He was safe with her. She did something instead of nothing. And suddenly, destiny didn't seem all that far-fetched an idea.
Chapter 14. Lisa Prater. The second Solomon mentioned Clark coming over, Lisa knew she'd earned his complete trust. It wasn't a far leap, of course, seeing as she'd practically become a member of his family, and what could have been an obligatory friendship with a disturbed boy had, in actuality, become one of the healthiest relationships in her life with one of the more level-headed people she'd ever met. And, lest you forget, it was going to make all of her dreams come true. It was finally time for Solomon to meet Clark and realize that no matter how well you hide, the world finds you and gives you reasons to come out of the shadows. Lisa had already saved him from complete solitude, so now it was time to give him another friend on the outside. She knew as soon as Clark walked in with that big, sincere smile and those sea-green eyes that Solomon, gay or not, would be enamored. Clark was one of those guys whose club you want to be in, and it was something you could tell just by seeing him, a familiarity and kindness that made strangers approach him all the time to ask for directions or to see if he was someone they knew. It was a specific kind of effortless charm that Lisa couldn't quite understand, but had certainly fallen victim to. And she was banking on similar results with Solomon. When she left Solomon's house later that night, she went straight to Clark's, and the second he opened the door, she looked him in the eyes and said, "It's time."
"Time for what?"
he asked blandly, letting her in and taking a seat on the couch. "Solomon, you, me."
"Oh, I didn't think that was ever going to happen."
He looked straight ahead at the TV. "Look, I know I've been gone a lot lately."
"A lot?"
he said, turning her away.
"If I didn't see you at school, I wouldn't even remember what you look like."
"Like you'd ever forget that," she joked.
"Don't do that,"
he said.
"I'm allowed to be frustrated, Lisa."
"I know, but this will fix everything."
"You think so?"
he said sarcastically.
"I can't wait to be the third wheel with you and the kid you're scamming."
"Watch it," she said, shooting him a look that made him flinch.
"Seriously, though, am I supposed to pretend you're not using him? Do I have to lie, too?"
"I'm not lying," she said. "I am his friend. That part's real. It didn't have to be, but it is, and he never has to find out anyway. We're the only ones who know about that essay."
"Shit. Tell me why I'd want to do this again."
"Because he needs you," she said. "And I need you. I know it feels wrong, I do. I'm not naive, but I think it's the only way. Plus, it's too late to undo what I've done, which is nothing short of damn impressive in terms of experimental psychological treatments."
"Jesus, Lisa, talk like a human."
"Clark, you're going to meet him, and you're going to know why I can't give up. You'll see what I see. We have to help him out of there. The world needs him."
"Fine,"
he said.
"But if he's weird, I'm not going back. I don't care if it ruins your experimental psychological treatment or not."
Since Lisa was afraid Clark would change his mind again, she planned to take him over to Solomon's the very next day. It would work perfectly since Jason and Valerie were having one of their date nights. Lisa figured the fewer people the better, just in case Solomon, or Clark for that matter, was feeling particularly anxious. When they were standing at his front door the next afternoon, Lisa looked over at Clark and just by raising one eyebrow, asked if he was ready.
"I feel like I should have a gift or something,"
he said. "You're not taking him to prom, just relax." When the door opened, Solomon stood silently on the other side. He was wearing a pair of blue jeans, something Lisa had never seen on him, a button-down shirt, and much to Lisa's surprise, shoes. "New shoes?" she asked.
"Yeah,"
he said, looking down at them.
"Mom had to guess my shoe size. They're a little big."
"Why do you need them?"
Clark asked.
"I mean, sorry, just, I don't think I'd ever wear them if I..."
"Sol, meet Clark Robbins, master of the foot and mouth."
"Hi,"
Solomon said.
"I've heard a lot about you, Solomon."
Clark extended a hand, and Lisa watched as they shook, him standing outside, Solomon standing inside, the divide between their worlds never clearer to her. And, like it was just another day, Solomon stepped aside and closed the door after they'd entered.
"You guys want something to drink?"
he asked.
"A snack, maybe? Mom said to ask as soon as you got here."
"No, thanks," Lisa said. And don't offer Clark food. He eats like a pre-hibernation bear.
I do, he said. It's disgusting.
No food then, Solomon said.
Should we sit or something?
Lisa led the way to the living room and took a seat on the sofa. She crossed her legs and looked up with a face that said, You should be sitting down too, you morons. So Solomon took the chair by the fireplace and Clark sat next to Lisa, throwing his arm over the back of the sofa.
This is weird, yeah? Solomon asked, looking at the floor. You know what's weird? Clark said. Stonehenge.
And Easter Island, Lisa added. Solomon looked up at them the way he should have, like they weren't making any sense, and then let out a little laugh.
Well, Clark, he said, as you can see, I don't get out much. So please explain to me why water polo is fun. Water polo? I thought I was just on a really bad swim team.
Lisa rolled her eyes at Solomon, who was, of course, laughing with Clark. These two were a match made in bad joke heaven. I've been trying to get a laugh like that out of him for a long time, Lisa said, crossing her arms.
Can I ask you guys something? Solomon said, his expression suddenly grave.
Sure.
How do you do it? These things are killing me.
He raised one leg and pointed to his shoe. It looked about a size too big and was a little out of style. This made her like him even more. You're going to have to get used to them again, Lisa said. Your feet have become too delicate.
Virgin feet, Clark added without hesitation. Great band name, Solomon said.
Clark Robbins and the Virgin Feet, Lisa said.
I like it, Clark nodded. Or maybe just Virgin Foot.
Ew, Lisa said. You made it weird.
Did I?
He asked Solomon.
Kind of. Okay, okay, Clark said. Can I ask you something, dude?
Yeah, Solomon said, looking a little worried.
You never leave the house? Like, not even a foot? In secret, maybe?
Clark, Lisa snapped.
Don't get me wrong, Clark continued. You could do worse. I mean, if you have to be inside all the time, at least your house is nice. But don't you ever want to go out there?
Well, yeah, Solomon said, looking toward Lisa.
Does he not know about the pool?
He pointed toward the glass door to their left and out to the large hole in the yard.
You think I'm just here to play chess? Clark said. I was promised pool parties and babes in bikinis and Star Trek marathons.
You were promised maybe one and a half of those things, Lisa corrected.
Fair enough. It's going to be awesome, man. It's our only real defense against global warming. Swimming? Solomon asked. You get in a pool and tell me the world's on fire. I don't think so.
That doesn't make any sense, Solomon said. Oh, yeah, Lisa said. Clark doesn't believe in global warming. It's the only thing he thinks his mom's right about.
Well, she also thinks I'm smart, which I can't argue with.
He doesn't always try to be this funny, Lisa said. This is nervous, Clark. A string of one-liners.
Guilty,
Clark said.
Why would you be nervous?
Solomon asked.
Meeting new people, you know,
Clark said. Tell him what else, Lisa urged.
Oh, yeah, Clark said. I hope this isn't rude, and I know we just got here and all, but I hear word of a holodeck, and I need that dream to come true whenever you're ready.
Okay, sure, we can go see it if you want, Solomon said, standing up. Maybe I should sit this one out. Lisa joked.
Never, Clark said.
Lisa had a hard time buying Clark's excitement as they followed Solomon through the kitchen and to the garage door, and she thought it looked like Solomon was just as excited as he was. When he'd shown her, he was almost embarrassed. They stepped inside, and Clark tightened his grasp on Lisa's hand before letting it go. He stood in the center of the room and slowly turned all the way around, looking at the floor, walls, and ceiling with this awestruck expression on his face. Solomon had that same look, but not because of the room. He stared right at Clark until he caught Lisa's eye and snapped out of it. When he closed the door, the room was pitch black except for the tape.
Incredible,
Clark said in a whisper, like he'd be saying it to himself even if no one else were around.
It's kind of ridiculous, I guess, Solomon said.
Not at all, Clark argued. Not even a little.
Lisa stood close enough to Clark to see him close his eyes for a second and then open them back up.
Okay, quick, he said. If you could be any character on The Next Generation, who would you be?
Easy, Solomon said. Data, for sure.
That makes sense,
Clark said. You?
I always liked Wesley Crusher.
What? Solomon was appalled. Nobody likes Wesley Crusher. Why not? Lisa asked. Because he's a total Mary Sue, Solomon said. He's too perfect.
But he's always saving the day, Clark argued. Like, always.
Exactly. He's just a talking deus ex machina. Everybody on the ship treats him like a dumb kid, then he saves them at the last minute, and every single time, they go right back to treating him like a dumb kid again. Do I need to remind you that the Starship Enterprise is full of genius scientists and engineers? Why is this kid, who can't get into Starfleet Academy, smarter than all of them?
Good point, Clark said. He's still my choice, though. So, where's the on switch to this room?
I know, right? Solomon said. It's just paint and tape.
You watch Community?
Clark asked.
I've seen an episode or two. One of the characters has a room like this, calls it the Dreamatorium. But his works, sort of. I'll show you sometime.
That would be awesome, Solomon said.
Why can't it be real? Where's the future we were promised, man?
For real, Clark said. We're supposed to have cooler things than drones that deliver toilet paper.
Drones deliver your toilet paper? Solomon asked.
Okay, so that is kind of cool. But still, where's my virtual reality? Where's my hover car? And where the hell is teleportation?
Why don't we teleport back to the living room, guys? Lisa suggested. I'm sorry to tell you that this room sort of gives me a headache.
Fine,
Clark said, disappointed.
But can I ask you one more thing?
Sure, Solomon said.
Do you ever stand in here with that garage door open?
No, I do not.
Interesting,
Clark said. When they were back in the living room, seated exactly how they'd been before, the awkward silence set in. It was inevitable, Lisa figured, but she was determined not to let any moment of this day be soured, so she immediately hopped up, walked over to the cabinet where they kept the board games, and opened it wide, turning to look their way. Let's teach Clark how to play Munchkin so we can destroy him.
I'm in,
Clark said. She's very good, Solomon added, standing up. It's disturbing, actually. No mercy, Lisa said. When they were all set up at the dining room table, Lisa knew she'd made the right decision. Already, Solomon seemed more relaxed as he shuffled the cards and started explaining the rules. She did notice a difference, though, between the way he'd taught her and the way he was teaching Clark. The first time, he'd haphazardly given her the basics of the game and ultimately decided to just start playing and teach her as they went along. But with Clark, he was taking the time to go over every little rule and circumstance possible. And even though it stretched out longer than it should have, Lisa knew why. He finally had something to say to Clark, and he didn't want it to end.
Chapter 15. Solomon Reed. Solomon couldn't believe this guy. He knew 5 phrases in Klingon and Dothraki. And he showed off these skills with a confidence that normally would have annoyed Solomon. But from Clark, it was endearing and innocent. It felt like he'd always been around. And just after Lisa beat them both at the first game, Solomon realized they'd been practically ignoring her the entire time. Sorry, he said, looking her way. I bet we're boring you to death. I'm past death, she said, smiling. Hell was great. Less Star Trek references. They ended up playing 2 more rounds, with a break for pizza in between. Lisa won the first, and Clark won the second. It was weird having friends like this. At his house, playing a game like it was no big deal. It wasn't to them, he thought.
which was so perfect. Nothing was forced. They were just there to have fun. Mostly, though, he watched Clark. Every single turn he would silently inspect his hand, looking back and forth from the table to his cards before making a move. When he drew a good card, he'd raise his right eyebrow just slightly enough to be noticed, and when he drew a bad card, he'd frown a little. And even despite noticing these things, Solomon was still too distracted to beat him. "Beginner's luck," he said after the second game. "Your time will come, rest assured."
"Oh, yeah?" Clark asked. "You care to make it interesting?"
"I do," he replied. "I wager the hand of your lady."
"Wait, what?"
Lisa said, helping put away the cards.
"Oh, you can have her," Clark joked. "What else you got?"
"Very funny," Lisa said. "It's getting kind of late."
"Yeah," Clark agreed. "Where are your parents?"
"They went to dinner and a movie," he said.
"Now that is something I bet you miss," Clark said. "Going to the movies, I mean?"
"I do. But I have Wi-Fi and TV, so it's not a big deal."
"But the popcorn," Clark added.
"Sometimes they bring some home."
"Dude, we could bring you stuff from the outside too, you know?"
"He's not in prison, Clark."
"Sorry, I didn't mean it like that."
"No, it's cool," Solomon said. "I don't miss much. It's easier than you guys think it is."
"I saw this movie called Copycat once," Clark said out of nowhere.
"I know that movie," Lisa interrupted, "with the chick from Alien."
"Yeah, Sigourney Weaver. Anyway, she played this criminal psychologist who couldn't leave her apartment. But then she gets all wrapped up in helping this detective find a serial killer."
"Oh, no. Do you guys need help finding a serial killer, too?" Solomon asked.
"This explains everything." "Or maybe someone else needed your help finding us," Clark said.
"That makes sense," Solomon said. "Now you're going to kill me?"
"Serial kill you," Clark said.
"Now you're just being ridiculous, dude." "Why does, like, every show on TV have a serial killer now?" Lisa asked. "There are 5 in the world and 1,000 on TV. Every week, it's a new sociopath making sculptures with human body parts."
"You have such a way with words, Lisa," Clark said.
"She's right, though," Solomon added. "If there were that many serial killers in real life, we'd all be scared shitless."
"Have you ever been scared shitless, though?" Clark asked. "Like so scared that you can't even think about ever taking a shit again. You're just done. For life."
"You're so gross," Lisa said.
"Have you?" Solomon asked Clark. "Oh, yeah. This one time, I guess it was about a year ago, my friend TJ and I went to this doll room at his grandma's house, and I swear to you, we saw one move."
"A doll?" Solomon asked.
"Yeah. So this room was filled floor to ceiling with those old, creepy porcelain dolls. The ones with the evil eyes, you know, that follow you no matter where you go. She collected them. Must have been a real psycho, because right when I stepped into that room, I felt the devil trying to get inside me."
"I don't believe in the devil," Solomon said.
"Me neither,"
Lisa added.
"You haven't seen what I've seen,"
Clark said with true terror in his eyes.
"He was really freaked out for a while," Lisa said. "It was hilarious."
"I still can't walk through the toy aisle at Target," he said.
"All right, I'm falling asleep," Lisa said, stretching her arms out above her head. "Thanks for letting us hang out, Saul."
"Yeah, anytime," he said.
He smiled and reached his fist out to meet hers. This is how they always said goodbye. But he got suddenly nervous about doing it in front of her boyfriend. When their knuckles met, Clark set one hand on top of theirs and shouted,
1, 2, 3, break!
weirdo, Lisa said. Say goodbye, Clark.